we're not doing anything, but we're not in Cape Town, but also doing some constituency work. We are going to have a presentation on APPs and strat plan. And we have here CISA, disaster, support, and DPI in that order. But let's first get apologies for those who are not able to be in the meeting here. The chair will read to us the apologies. And litigation as well, for us to know who's here. But we still, you know, we still like to hear everyone saying, President so and so from this entity and this position, because we can go through the names in accordance with the delegation that is here, but we still have to associate the name with the face. So we prefer, excuse me, but we do that introduction, but let's first come to apologies.
Morning, members. We have apologies from the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the DG. Thank you.
Just briefly say who you are, the history you represent, and the position you hold, so that in future when we have some concerns already, you know who to talk to directly and not say the other way. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Zukile Novete, the chairman of CETA.
Good morning, members and chair. My name is Rosana Rasukinya, I'm the CFO of CETA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mohammed Chawan, CFO at USASA.
Good morning, members. Kikaman Tingulunko, CEO of USASA.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. Mark Barnes, CEO of SOPA.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Nicola Dewar, Group CFO of SOPA.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Lunga Bashangi, board member of USASA.
Good morning, I'm Jamila Mkosi, board member for USASA.
Good morning, honorable.
Morning, honorable chairperson, officials and members. Mawitu Kawe, chairperson of USASA.
Morning, chair and honorable members. Linda Nene, board member of USASA.
Chair, good morning, and the honorable members. I am Ola Stock, the board member of USASA as well. Thank you.
Good morning, chair and honorable members.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Omega Shalembe, DDG for SOC Oversight at the DTPS.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Thabo Makinate. I am with MultiChoice GM Technical Regulator.
Good morning.
My name is
Ntingwe from DM's office.
Thank you very much. I think the APPs that are going to be presented here are in line with the NDP SA-Connect policies and also not contrary to the Constitution. I think we are aligning ourselves with the issues that were raised in the financial year 2016 regarding corrective measures and improvements to the areas that have been raised by members. And they also hope that the APPs are looking to the resources that we have, especially the budget and human capital, so that we're able to implement our targets successfully. We're also mindful of unintended consequences that there are mishaps in the process of the implementation or executing our targets. But I think through quarter reports, we'll be able to deal with you know, the challenges as they come. And I made a mistake here of not recognizing people who are sitting over there. You can just complete by getting protection from them, then you continue. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, morning, Honorable Members, and everybody else. Carmenita Dudley from Telcom.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher, and I'm from Sibnet. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members and everybody. My name is Rendan Seta from the GGPS. I'm the Chief Director of the GGPS.
Morning, everyone. My name is Nosisi Madlanga from GGPS, Chief Director. SOC Oversight.
Good morning, everybody. Mr. Abrams, PMG.
Thank you. I think we're done now. Can we get the CTAS presentation? And I think as the entities are presenting in the department as well, members will take note of the issues that were raised in 2016 if they've been taken into consideration. Thank you.
Good morning. If we look at the strategic overview, we would like to make a certain acknowledgement that we have been previously done to or made to the committee, which is essentially related to our core mandate. Remembering that our core mandate, there are two elements of our core mandate. The first one is to make use of government spend on IT to improve service delivery overall. And then the second one then is to drive operational efficiencies. Looking at the first one, the measurement, the performance measurement on the Object 6.1 should really not just be about technical IT metrics, as we said before. One can even look at a bigger metric, for example, like the effectiveness of e-government or digitalization with respect to specific public service metrics. And what we'd like to do in the first set of slides is to acknowledge the fact that over the last couple of years, probably even since the inception of this organization, that much as the spend on IT has been increasing, and if one looks at other statistics, the percentage of IT spend on IT is fairly high compared to other kind of countries. We still do not get the same kind of output, or even we're not trending on the same level as the trend in the increase of IT. And there are a couple of measurements that we use. We use the global e-government ranking, that is on page 4, and then on page 5, that's much clearer, I think, in the we use the this other metrics that come from the World Economic Forum, which talks about essentially the effectiveness of or usage and effectiveness of IT. And there we know that while in other metrics, for example, on individual usage and business usage, we know that we rank quite high. For example, average ranking on individual usage is 77 out of about 136 countries or so. When it comes to the use of IT in government, we rank quite low at 105. And then when it comes to the social impacts of IT, we rank even lower. Now, remembering our mandate, 6.1 of the first mandate of CETA, it is to improve service delivery through IT. And if one is looking at service delivery from a social impact point of view, clearly the statistics say that in 2016 we had not done well. In fact, we have shown before that the trend on social impact, at least over the last 3 years, has been going down, and the trend on government usage of IT has been going down. So having re-established this problem statement with other sources of data, also looking at global innovativeness and so on and so forth, we then looked internally to say why, if we're the driver of service delivery using IT, how have we configured ourselves, and what have we been doing probably wrong to get us to this point. And then we looked at some data points in there from our internal lab systems. So on page 6, we show the services that we provide as the first column there, the number of users that are consuming those services, and then the number of service delivery employees that are almost dedicated. We use some, even though sometimes people do different things, we use our internal clocking system to be able to distribute people. So these are composed of employee equivalents in service delivery. So they would include people like myself and the CFO. So that's 2,580 out of about 3,300 employees. And then we also look at how we have directed the funds, the government funds, internal to CETA to deliver those services that the government spent. So that would have been our budget in the previous financial year, 6.4 billion. And then we just look at how we then, the nature of the distribution of the human and financial resources in different activities. The first thing that we pick up there is that about 67% of employees are concentrated or focused on maintaining existing operations. And there is end-user computing. That just means that they are maintaining the office environment, the office LAN and desktop kind of support. And then about 900 of them are involved in just application maintenance, and quite a large chunk of that is what we call functional application support, which is providing support to users of applications on how those applications work. And it's not necessarily technical maintenance support. And then the last ones are service and management, which involves the call center and then the various help desks. So all of that, all of what does is just to maintain existing operations, and not much additional things are being added there. So if one looks at the improvement in service delivery on the basis of this deployment of human resources, one is not going to get much out of that. And then we looked also at the financial resources as well. Here we looked at the infrastructure that is being maintained, and that about 63% of the fund are used to just maintain existing infrastructure. So it is existing network, we've talked about it before. Has been existing, the hosting infrastructure, and then the existing end-user computing infrastructure licenses, and so on and so forth, and then the applications there. Of course, there were opportunities to then do things differently whether it's networks in hosting or end-user computing. But we know that we've been doing things the same way. That, for example, the network, the last refresh was in 2005, and that design has stayed the same. So those funds have essentially been maintaining that infrastructure the way it was before. On the other side, there have always been opportunities to add more or add more value or create new things. And that would have been, for example, in application development, so necessarily e-government or digitizing of government and so on and so forth, refreshing architecture and standards and specifications over time, and then building up our security environment. However, in respect to those things that have the potential of adding value, we've only allocated 9.6% of our employees and only 5% of our of the fund financial resources. So I mean, this is work that we did during the year. We have understood what has happened in the past, and part of this plan for the new year is just change this profile a little bit, start moving our efforts away from application maintenance, especially with respect to people that work for CETA, and put a lot more into the application development. We may not hire all the developers if we are to build or fill the gap that has been created through not focusing on development. Of course, we'd have many, many, many people, but we'll have to have at least a layer of development or application designers, a layer of architects, and maybe a layer of developers for certain critical items, and then use the best that the country has in terms of development capacity and already existing development systems. One of the things that we're looking at in reversing this trend is also looking at the issue of licenses and intellectual property. A lot of times when we do application maintenance, the numbers that you saw now, it's, as I said, most people are, application maintenance are functional application support. There was a time when we were developing our own applications and then providing technical maintenance to those applications. But over the last couple of years, maybe last 10 years, we've been doing more buying of applications. If you go back to, for example, page 7, you'll see how that we spend more money on procurement than on, I mean, if you look at it as an activity, than on even maintaining the infrastructure. And that reflects in the amount of money that we pay in licenses. And that reflects on the amount of money that we pay in support and maintenance. And then our inability, therefore, afterwards, to then control the destiny of this application that are sometimes are unique to our environment. So one of the strategic objectives then of moving, of increasing our capability in development is building the intellectual capacity or intellectual property value of government systems, whether they reside in CETA or they reside in other public entities. And then this comes back, and then essentially what we then end up having is a CETA that is similar to the ones that I think we've flashed the slide before many times. But this kind of CETA that then focuses on architectural standards and security, on transversal kind of applications, and where our definition of transversal becomes wider. For example, if there is already a payment system that is used by ourselves, and then the question we ask ourselves is why should we not make that a transversal system that can be used by any government department that transacts. If there's a system or module that is sitting at SABO, the question is why should we not make that system transversal, particularly to the extent that there is already a lot of government IP that is embedded in those systems. So we become the aspiration here would be for a CETA to put more effort in being a thought leader, and then less being trying to be an implementer of everything. And even when we go into procurement, we go it on the basis of our own times, and then we bring the necessary efficiency. So having said that, the strategic program is actually still the same. It is just doing things differently based now on bottom-up data. So it does still say that we should do value-added procurement, which we have reviewed quite extensively. As we have said before, I think, to this committee, in a special sitting, that our procurement reforms are underpinned by automation, fast automation. And we have, in fact, already implemented an automation system that is already facilitating purchasing of things like laptops. I was quite happy to hear yesterday from a member of the industry that they received a request to bid of what looked like a system-generated RFQ. And in fact, we got down to them that it was the automation system that was working. We say that we should focus on our core IT services there. These are things that we essentially do ourselves. We should be in the architecture and design and thought leadership space. In our IT environment, we specifically look at e-government that talks to focusing on application development, and then on security of everything else, and then focusing again on the acknowledging that this environment works around people, competencies, attitudes, a hunger to continuously learn, and then look at our internal processes as well to drive our efficiencies all around. And that program, in our APP, we have structured it into three areas: the service delivery infrastructure. Service delivery essentially what the departments consume and see as their services. And then infrastructure is the building block, and then procurement, and then look at financial sustainability. And in a sense, just to highlight that, is that we get all our funds from the payments that departments make on services that they consume from us. We do not get any direct funds from the fiscal. So of course those payments, the funds that the departments get used, are drawn from the fiscal directly. And our role matches the way we are scheduled, as we should return any surplus that we make back to the fiscals. But our engagements with Treasury is that we should have a positive cash flow. We should have a positive free cash flow, so that we can do two things. We can maintain our infrastructure, but more importantly, build our capabilities, looking at the backlog that we just talked about now. And then lastly, of course, is to focus on managing this organization with the higher standards of governance and administrative efficiencies. The programs are still based on phase 13 on the 22 initiatives. As a result, we or 23 initiatives, I must say. As a result, we have just confirmed that our strategic plan has not changed, and that was something that we had done last year. And then on page 14, we tried to bring at least one slide that combines our aspirations on service delivery to how we then change our infrastructure. So the picture here is that the CETA infrastructure systems are old. As I mentioned, we put in money there maintaining that. And our ability then to deliver services to, or to enable government to deliver services to citizens or to businesses or to any other thing that government manages, for example, the environment, land, and so on and so forth, is then hampered, most certainly, if one looks at evolution. So what we do here is then to change the way we then design or design our modernization program. At the top level there, we say that it's important to understand the universe of objects that government deals with. There we show, and then understand the requirements of each of those objects at a point in time, and then understand the requirements of these objects during their lifetime. And then understand then how government should then react on number two there. And therefore, for example, when we say digitize a government interface to citizen, understand what that means for a child who interacts with government through their guardians, for a learner in basic education, all the way to grannies who are at the point where they get or need social support. So it's quite important to understand that life cycle. And as I said, the life cycle of the object could be a person in this case, or it could be a business in a early startup all the way to a large multinational business that originates from the country directly. And then that means that in number two there, we then create a program for digitizing government interfaces. And these could be different departments, of course. Within a certain context, for example, in the ADS, there would be a number of departments. Of course, there would be Home Affairs, there would be Health, there would be Social Development, and so on and so forth. Understand what are the interactions within that context there, and what needs to be digitized. And by the time we go lower, for example, in number four on data, we then understand how the data that is drawn from the different departments that serve the child at that stage of life should be integrated. And then moving a little bit in number three, we look at the applications, the applications that are supported in different departments that are supporting a child at that stage of life, and look at how those applications should then interface. Over time, once we understand those things, and then number five there, we then look at the way we deliver or we host, for example, the applications and the data. Remember that earlier we saw how much effort we're putting in hosting, right? And we said that there have always been opportunities to optimize that, to get hosting infrastructure at lower cost. By the time we get to number five, we understand the complexity there. We understand that, in fact, most systems in one way or another have to be integrated. Therefore, there's an element of them being transversal. And therefore, for us to be able to digitize everything with the same way of doing things, it will cost too much money. So this creates a problem, for example, on cloud computing that we've already started. And then number six, finally, or rather number seven, finally, is then to understand how we should design or we should put requirements for the underlying broadband network to be able to meet and satisfy everything on top of that. So the network for schools, for example, public safety, public facing departments has certain characteristics as opposed to a network that is where the government essentially is working internally. And once we have done that, we have created a different dialogue. We've created a different understanding of what government needs to do. We've created a different understanding of what we need to do to enable government to perform better. And we've created a much fuller program for fulfilling the very first object of CETA, which is to improve service delivery through the use of IT, which is from 2 to 7. And then once we've done that, we then apply the same principles in government business applications. The applications that government uses to serve members of the public. We look at applications that government uses to manage its resources, for example, IFMS, then we can put it in proper context. And then applications that government uses to just operate internally, for example, your productivity systems, your emails and conferencing systems and so on and so forth. And then we apply ICT security across the board, and then we apply business continuity across the board. So that's a slight change in how we then implement the same program that we've been talking about over the last couple of years, 3 years. And then focusing on procurement there, maybe I should just go to the, page 17 and highlight the key elements of our change in approach to procurement. Again, this is now more in pursuit of the second object of CETA. Suggested that our reforms are based on automation. We promised last year that we're building the automation system and that in the new year, which is this year, 17-18, would then load essentially all our procurement activities into the automation system and try to get national departments to then use the system for all the certain ICT procurement. And then in the later years, 18-19, and to do the same thing for provincial governments. I suggested that the automation system has now been deployed. It is now being used for a transversal contract, which has been with CETA, I must say, for more than 10 years, the one that has always caused angst from departments that we remember the comment that it cost twice as much to buy a computer through CETA than if departments go by themselves. So that procurement vehicle has been changed, has been refreshed, And not only that, but also it's been put into the automation system. We have also put some of the National Treasury tenders into, these are non-IT tenders, into the automation system, and also put some vehicles that don't require procurement but just require buying into the automation system. And our program for this year, again, as I said, is to put everything that CEDA does into the system. And then the second program there is about commodity sourcing. And this is a very, very big project for us, because we've always been saying that our approach to procurement of things that look like commodities is fragmented. So there are things that are required by pretty much all departments, but each department negotiates separately with the vendors. And if we do, we have a framework agreement that does not compel people to use it. So all of that is actually done a lot more. We've worked with Treasury, as you said before, on the 10 big or strategic commodity items, and one of them has already gone through last year. And we are doing the other 9 to be completed by October this year. And so the output of that is one framework agreement for all of this, for each commodity. And then using Treasury's mandate in setting up norms and standards, to once Treasury satisfies itself that if there is value for money, use their mandate in setting up norms and standards on SCM to then essentially put an enforcement mechanism throughout all of government. Then of course there's an automation system then to support the operation there. Once we've done that, then in 2B there is that we then release departments. Still, it will be a delegation from our side, release departments then to transact on their own, because we put all the controls. We put the controls in negotiations. We do that ourselves in 2A. And then in 2B, we put the controls in transactions into the system, and then allow departments to transact on their own, whether it's through buying or through doing procurement directly. And then, but then because the system is operated by us, we can always do monitoring, evaluation, and then checking whether things are being done properly. And then in 3, we take another approach to strategic sourcing. This is where, these are complex, this would be sourcing based on complex requirements that would ordinarily involved a lot of design and interaction with departments. If we build up our architecture and standards work, then we turn that into a consulting engagement with departments, as opposed to a pure specification engagement for simply tenders. And then once we've done all of that and we've done our consulting work, then again we release the tender administrative work back to departments. What we do on our own now is then 4, which is a lot more prior work in research. Research on demand, research on methods of deployment, research on opportunities for consolidation, and then do other research on the supply side, in the market side. If something has been with us for 10 years, as we normally get it, or the supplier, or this solution has been with us for 2000, are we now going to enforce that there is prior research on whether there are alternative solutions to the business problem, not also alternatives to the technical solution that has been with government for the last 20 years, but looking at the business problem there. So that is something that is still going to stay with CEDA directly. So that directly in our procurement reforms. There is our automation system on page 18, which supports simple buying. We support sourcing, we support contract management, we support analytics, including supplier analytics, which links to the supplier database, and then allows for much smoother interaction between users in departments and then suppliers. I must say, for example, in the case of this tender that we're showing on the right side, these are the ones that I talked about earlier, for procurement of end-user devices and peripherals. A process that would normally have taken about 2 months, we've proven that it can take as little as 48 hours. In fact, we have a department that was so happy to get it in 14 days, and they said that the 7 days was really because of them. But they've gotten the benefit, and they see the benefit of all of these things, this automation system. maybe other things that we are doing, particularly around SMMEs. Last year we passed an SMME policy, and we are going to use this automation system then to implement a number of quite progressive provisions that are contained in that policy. Once you've done all of this on page 20, then I won't go into this slide. Safe to say that we know, or we're quite convinced that we can then move a CETA. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but we now have at least a path to moving a CETA from an inefficient and potentially ineffective organization that is crippled, or not crippled, but that is challenged by inefficient internal cost structures, and also quite inefficient external cost structures, into an organization that operates as close to efficiencies of the market as possible. But even if we don't get to that level of efficiency, at least we the theory there suggests that we can then deliver services more cost effectively based on bulk work than if individual departments were to source them from the individually from the market. And that would then go into our evolving tariff model that would then allow for much better transparency, which is what departments have been asking for in how we charge for our services. Then moving forward fairly quickly on the APP itself for this year, the one change that we've made on page 23 is the number of KPIs. We've reduced them from 27 in the previous year to 14. I do recall that there was a stern warning given by the committee that our targets before were quite high, so we have reduced them appropriately. But we still covered our major program areas, civil about infrastructure, and so on. The next pages will show where the changes are. I won't go into too much detail. Safe to say that the programs that are not showing up in the APP are not lost. We've just moved them into divisional levels. So let me not go through those changes. I'll take questions on those ones. And rather go to start with page 29, sorry, which is the 14 that are in the APP. Just highlight some of the changes in the specific targets. For example, we still have an earnings before interest and tax target, but this financial year, instead of putting it as a percentage, again based on the nature of our operating environment, we put a number, because then it allows us to then manage our cash better. It's a much better metric when you are cash challenged. And the other one is apologies, if we go to page 33 actually, because page those other pages were still the continuation of the changes. Apologies. And it starts with problem one, which is service delivery. The first one, which we have weighted quite high, is government services deployed. We've always, there's a slight change there. We always said implemented, but implemented could be just that we have developed them and somebody has signed off. So here it's actually that they've been deployed in government and they've been used, and we still have an annual target of 20 of those. And then we are then using for ICT security, we are using a benchmark, saying that yes, level 2 is still quite low right now, but at least it's starting to put a metric that is global in nature, as opposed to just picking up on activities, because this metric then allows us to look at our entire security environment. We still look at our customer satisfaction levels. Last year we had 60%. The final result is still subject of the normal audit, year-end audit. But even noting what the result was, we still increased our target for satisfaction there, because we are quite concerned about the perception of our services from customers. And then on the naturally, we still have our performance against our SLAs. This talks to the performance of the operating, technical operating environment at 98%. And then we still aspire to do more of what we were created to do. We put a market share target there, but it simply means that if we were mandated to do 100 things and we're only doing 60 things, the 40 that departments are doing on their own reflects a weakness of our side, and we should always try to then increase our scope towards 100 as much as possible. And this is not through fleshing the law, the CETA Act, but it's through properly having departments accept our value proposition. And then on infrastructure, we have two items there. The first one addresses the challenges that I highlighted before on hosting, modernizing our hosting environment, and putting a government-owned and government-operated cloud infrastructure and cloud computing service, which allows us then to modernize the entire base. But that does not mean that there won't be things that will not be put in external cloud infrastructure. But certainly we know that there are things that have to be, that have to sit in a government-controlled cloud infrastructure. We'd like also to accelerate our disaster recovery work. We did fairly well last year as a first step in putting government systems under disaster recovery towards our full business continuity of government, so we kept that as well. We still are concerned about the turnaround times of tenders, but probably by the end of this year, after reporting this year, with automation in place, we'll probably rest this target here, because we'll be able to have control our ability to turn around tenders, not only on time, on reliably, but also on good time from a basic performance point of view. We kept our the spend on SMME supported by our new policies, and we put a target of 30% there. And then on finance, this is what I was just referring to earlier, that on EBIT we've moved away from a percentage target to a number target, because then that aligns with our cash generating, our ability to generate cash, even if we may be challenged as we are now in the on the top line, on the revenue line. And then our what replaces the liquidity ratio now is the net collection rate. That addresses, I think, a sticking point that shows up in the balance sheet, and the CFO will talk about it, which is our receivables. This is now moving forward, saying that everything that is billed, at least we now should be able to collect 80% of what is billed during the financial year. And that requires us to look at the entire chain of service delivery, because it's not always that departments are not paying for services rendered, and everybody understands. Some of the problems start at the design, at implementation, and even operations level. And then lastly, we look at our gross margin, which allows us to look at the efficiencies of our service delivery functions. And again, we've changed from a percentage to a number to align it with our cash generation aspirations. And then lastly, on the KPIs, we have kept the target in the shape of on target management, focusing on succession planning, among other things, and even the proper recruitment, saying that each critical position, that this must be a cover ratio of 1 to 2, and that the final year target must be 30% of those critical positions. We made a new one, we've removed the complicated target of something that we used to call HPO, which is quite a complex metric, and just reduced an item there, or taking one item, which is employee satisfaction, because that's understandable by everybody, and put an initial target of 60% for employee satisfaction. Through Chair, if you allow me that, allow that the CFO then does those in the finances.
Thank you. If we go to slide number 39,
It reflects the budget for the next 3 years. If we look at the column that says budget FY 2017-18, that will be the budget that will support the targets that the CEO has presented. So I can safely confirm that we have taken into consideration all the targets, and we have budgeted for all the expenses to deliver those targets. So we have budgeted a revenue of around 6.3 billion. This obviously deals with the services revenue and agency transactions or agency revenue. We then have a gross profit of around 1.3 billion, and the gross margin is around 21%, which is aligned to our target of around 20% that we have put in the target. We went further and looked, analyzed this in terms of what is contributing to the gross margin. So the agency transactions, they contribute around 5% to the gross margin. Obviously, that's where we go out on tender on behalf of departments, and then we don't really do much in terms of other related services. Then if we look at the services in terms of network hosting, application development and application maintenance, it gives us a gross margin of around 24%, combined then giving us a gross margin of around 21%. Just to note that obviously throughout the years we've been trying to cap the operating expenses. So if you look at marketing this year, we've put it at 50 million. There's a lot of initiatives in terms of marketing all these new products that we are coming up with, including the e-government services, the cloud services, but also to run the GovTech, it goes into that line item. Obviously, labor, you have to split it between what is direct and indirect labor. So there is indirect labor to cover costs like hours, that we are sitting here, but you can see it has been going down. And this, I think, throughout the 2016-17 financial year and this current financial year, that's one area that we are trying to control in order for us to meet all our other obligations. Obviously, we have to put money. We are an innovative company, and research and development and training is quite important. So there is money that is put aside specifically for training of our people. The training is not where just people go for project management and training that are irrelevant to their environment. These are certification training that we would like to carry out. So basically, it gives us the whole budget, then give us earnings before interest and tax of around 139 million. The members will note that in the 15-16 financial year, we had a loss, and we have tried through 2016-17 to control that loss and actually turn it around into a profit. Obviously, that's still subject for an audit. But we did try and do this. This is despite the fact that since 2008-09 financial year, we haven't had, CETA has not had a tariff increase. So our costs are escalating in line with inflation, but the tariffs have not increased. And this is something that we are discussing with the department to see how we can resolve the issue. And then we are looking at a net surplus of around 136 million. This budget includes all the things relating to cloud, the automation that the CEO has spoken about, the issues around e-government that we are implementing or deploying. If you look at the next slide, which is slide 40, it looks at the statement of financial position in terms of the budget. We are still safe in terms of the cash and cash equivalent. We do have I would say adequate resources to obviously fund the CAPEX. Obviously, there is an issue in terms of trade and other receivables. We have then applied what is in the target. In the target, we said we are going to collect 80% of the debts that of the invoices that are raised in the current financial year. So we've taken that into consideration. Hence, the budget reflects a reduction in trade and other receivables. We've put mechanisms in place to make sure that we collect the revenue that is accrued in that financial year. Income tax receivable, this is if you increase your revenue, obviously there is money that you might get or you might have to pay the receiver of revenue. It is decreasing because our profit is not that high. There are prepayments that the department or our customers that we make in advance, specifically for licenses. Sometimes the licenses you have to pay them in the beginning of the financial year for the rest of the financial year. So those are in prior year, so that by 1st of April those licenses are covered. There is money that we've put aside for improvement of our infrastructure. In the 2017-18 financial year, we've put aside 600 million, and that would be a reflection that is in the cash flow statement. And also in the APP, there's a breakdown of the budget per program in terms of our CAPEX. If we look at the rest of the balance sheet, the post-retirement medical aid is something that is still there. And this is something that we need to obviously look at when we've got enough cash reserves to see if we can take it out of the balance sheet. If we go to the next slide, it shows us the statement of cash flows. It shows an improvement. In the actual for 2015-16, we actually had cash from operating activities of around 124, but we see that increasing to 670 million, and this is based on how we are managing the creditors and how we are managing to collect the debt. But also, obviously, if the company is making profit, then the cash from operating activities will definitely increase. The forecast also is a positive one, which I think is good in terms of what we have done in managing the costs down. Cash from operating activities, in the 15-16, we spent around 511 million in terms of cash in improving our infrastructure. We have then put a budget of around 600 million for the 2017-18 financial year. There's a slight increase in our cash and cash equivalent of 70 million, which leaves us with a positive cash and cash equivalent of around 1 billion. That's basically the finances that support the target. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think all of us remember that in the past we used to have all the presentations and engage thereafter. But a concern was raised in the last meeting to see if it takes too much that hampers the quality of engagement at the end of the presentation. And it was agreed that we take two and engage thereafter. So we're going to take Usasa after Usasa, then we engage. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me take the liberty of also recognizing the officials, MPs and so on. Mine is very short. It's just to firstly thank you for inviting us here to present the APP of 2017-18. Just to say, the board from early this year, it has been capacitated in terms of the necessary resources, which is going to enable us to accomplish what we want to accomplish. For instance, early this year, the DPS officials which are sitting there, which really I must thank them in front of you, they were able to get us additional 3 board members. And those 3 board members, they were actually sort of appointed on the guest that we have in terms of board. Very quickly, for instance, I've got Mr. Stokwe Tola there, who's capable financial person. He's a CFO of a big company, 20 billion company. Next to him, I've got Linda, who's very, very strong in terms of auditing skills. Luckily, he has the history as well, memory, because he's been in other 2 boards prior to us being appointed. And then I've got Madam Jabulile Ngozi, who's very, very strong in terms of corporate governance. So really, with the 3 board members and the current 4 and the CEO and the CFO who was appointed as well late last year, I think USASA is geared to actually accomplish what is required in terms of the APP. And that by itself as well, its nature, is going to strengthen the sort of the committees of the board. Because in the past, we had double dipping, we had 4 people who were running around all the committees, and though we didn't want to make that an excuse, but I think it was our shortcoming in that last year. Also, I want to mention that what is clear for us is delivery this coming year. There's no excuses, and with the money that we have, which is not the money that we hope we have, we need to be smart in terms of how we capitalize on that money. So one of the things we'll very much push this year is collaboration. We've spoken about this, and I think the CEO and his team have done a lot in terms of talking to industries and also municipalities. Because as we actually roll out in the areas that we're supposed to roll in, we need their support and we synergize resources. Because municipalities and provincial governments, where they are, they have ICT money. So we talk about convergence, and I think it must start with resources as well as we talk about convergence in terms of technology. And the CEO will actually, and his team will expand both on APP and the finances. And really, you know, we are blessed to be here. I brought my members over them to actually, they are very experienced, but it's for you to see them, and so that you also are confident of a fully complemented team. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson and members, good morning. We here presenting the extract from the detailed presentation that was tabled in this house. So I'll try and focus on the areas of emphasis in order to manage the time that was allocated to us. The detailed submission that was tabled, it speaks to our human capital strategy, it speaks to where we are, and therefore contextualizes the APP. The table of contents for the purposes of today is just going to be in summary that is what is listed there. We have not changed much in respect of our vision and mission. So we still exist to ensure universal access and service to ICTs for all. And of course, we're still committed to the values in respect of the Batupili values, integrity, accountability, innovation, transparency, and so forth. Legislatively, we derive our mandate from our laws and the policy. policies, the NDP, as Chairperson said at the opening, and we have aligned and ensured that we understand our mandate from the laws, from the policies that are guiding us, including SA Connect, and the plans, including the 9-point plan, the NDP, and so forth. And also, we add value to the CIP 15, and our mandate accordingly is to strive to promote the goal of universal service and access, foster the adoption and use of new methods of attaining universal access and service, conduct research into and keep abreast of developments in the Republic and elsewhere on ICTs, electronic communication services and electronic communications facilities, manage the universal service and access fund in accordance with the provisions of the Act, provide incentives to network licensees to construct, operate and maintain networks in underserviced areas. So Chair, accordingly, will present two companies, the first being the USASA and the second being USAF, as you have ruled last year that we present these separately. The next slide just extracts from the relevant laws and policies that then showcase what we have to do in terms of our mandate. And it is always refreshing to go back to the Constitution, where you can see that as far back as 93 and even 96, in the Bill of Rights, we were preparing for a digital world. So as we confront the fourth industrial revolution, the vision has always been enshrined back in 1996 for South Africa. The next slide shows also in terms of the detail of those provisions in the different plans in respect of the targets in the NDP, new growth paths and 9-point plan, and of course the aim in respect of CIP 15, where 100% access to digital ICT to all South Africa must be achieved by 2020 as a driver of new economic opportunities and digital equity. Then the next slide, Chair, shows the alignment with the DTPS goals and our strategy thereof, because of course, as you are aware, we are an implementing agency of the DTPS. We, in respect of USASA, we have two strategic goals with 9 objectives, strategic objectives. The goal is to optimize organizational functioning towards the achievement of a clean audit. And the second one is the increased USASA capabilities as an information hub on universal service issues. And the objectives, of course, for the strategic goal number one is to improve audit outcomes, risk maturity profile, improve organizational efficacy through integrated business processes and automated systems, improve employee performance, increase efficacy, and, of course, improve brand and reputation of USASA. The others is, of course, in respect of evidence-based planning, improve quality and reliability and integrity of performance information, and of course the quality of research and evaluation output. Accordingly, Chair, we've got two programs. We have, you would recall when we were here last year, we've been discussing the challenges we had with our APP 16-17. You would see this APP that is been aligned accordingly with our mandate and also aligned in respect of the approach of National Treasury and the Department of Performance, Monitoring and Evaluation. So with USASA we've got two programs, Business Support and Business Intelligence. And you can see our targets are measurable, achievable, so we've followed the SMART principles in this plan so that we do not come with excuses come reporting time. And we've made it easy for you to see exactly what we plan to do in quarter one, in quarter two, in quarter three. And that is outlined here in respect of percentages, in terms of percentages, numbers that are measurable, that you can indeed be able to see what we planned to do and what we've achieved. And that is in terms of all the different strategic objectives that are listed there, which I've spoken to. The next slide is a continuation of strategic objectives in respect of business support. Just to emphasize there, we had a conversation in terms of the performance of USASA. We have set ourselves targets to improve employee performance, and we've also set ourselves targets to deal with the challenges that we ongoingly deal with in respect of the environment that we work under, which is full of litigation. So we have put ourselves, we have put programs to ensure we improve and increase efficiency and effectiveness of our legal services. The next slide is to our plans and programs or activities in respect of brand and reputation management, where again last year we discussed a lot in terms of stakeholder management. Here we've set ourselves targets for that purpose, and we've been in engagement with the Ministry of Small Business Development, and we've set targets in terms of how we plan to increase support for SMMEs and BE development, and those are the targets thereof. The next slide speaks to the second program of our APP of USASA, which is the strategic goal to increase USASA capabilities as an information and knowledge hub on universal access and universal service issues. Accordingly, our objective is to increase evidence-based planning, to improve quality and reliability and integrity of performance information. And there we've set targets for ourselves in respect of the different quotas. Also, we have set targets, clear targets for research. You would recall that there has been this area of research which has been limping in terms of delivery. We have unpacked what we need to do, and in the light of the new ICT integrated white paper policy, we have planned to work with the DTCS to develop a conceptual framework and business case for the Digital Development Fund. You would recall that in terms of the new policy, USASA will be dissolved with the functions of USASA distributed. Those that relate to regulatory work will go back to USASA. Those that relate to policy will go back to the department, and USASA will focus, or the Digital Development Fund will focus on the mandate in terms of promoting universal service and access. And we have then set ourselves work to develop a conceptual framework and the business case with the department and set those targets. So we're preparing for that future as part of our work in this financial year. I will then ask the CFO to speak to the detailed reconciliation of performance targets with the budget.
Good morning to the Chair and Honourable Members. This slide here speaks to the reconciliation of the performance targets as indicated by our CEO with the budget and the MPEC. The first program is in terms of business support. While this is quite a busy slide, I can unpack it for you. It's the main items to draw to your attention would be the last line where we have listed the total expenditure. It shows basically the audited outcomes over the last two financial years that have been indeed audited, as well as the estimated expenditure for the current financial year that ends 2016-17. In terms of going forward now for 2017-18, the main column is the one, the third from your right, which speaks to the 73.98 million rands, which will then support the programs and all the items that make up program number one. In terms of business intelligence, which the CEO has just spoken to, again, if we draw attention to the third column from the right, that speaks to the last line, 1.7 million, that's what will be spent towards the achievement of program two of the performance targets. Thank you.
Thanks, Sefo. Just to wind up the SASA presentation, you would realize whereas we are within the strategic plan that we have for this MTF, but we have added some new innovations that are intended to address some of the challenges that we have faced after rolling out the infrastructure, i.e. we have as part of our plans to conduct digital summits at the localities with partners from SMMEs who are going to add value to the network that we have deployed in those localities, and all other role players, including the beneficiaries, the departments, the municipalities. So we have plans for those digital summits, and also we have planned to develop a master plan for what we call smart communities, and to then indicate clearly after deploying the infrastructure in those communities, what will be a measure that will indicate and assist us to then say that that community is a smart community. With all the partnerships we have planned with different partners to ensure that we achieve that, so that we don't only speak of smart cities, but we must have smart communities as part of the positive impact of the infrastructure that we are rolling in these communities. So that's the presentation in terms of SASA. Now I'm going to go to Yusuf, the fund, through your chair. Accordingly, in terms of Yusuf, we also show the alignment. I'm not going back to the legislative and policy framework because that's clear in terms of the USASA presentation. It's just the alignment to accordingly show that we have aligned our plan with the DGPS goals, and we've got one strategic goal as for yourself, which is increased connectivity to underserved and unserved areas, accordingly with three strategic objectives: to increase the rollout of the infrastructure in underserved areas, increase access to digital broadcasting services, increase digital literacy to stimulate end user demand through sustainable community broadband services. You can see here again that we are still within the strategic plan that you had approved, but we have repackaged our objectives. The infrastructure rollout is still there, connectivity is still there, broadband digital migration is still there. But we have added innovation in terms of digital literacy, again, to respond to the potential white elephants that we would have if we do not have interventions to ensure that there is end user demand, and therefore the infrastructure is used. Just briefly, this slide just shows in the value chain where we play. So that you understand what BBI does, what USASA does, what Telkom does, etc. So that is where we play, which is in the last mile area where we build and construct the backhaul to the underserved areas and provide the CPE where necessary. The next slide shows in detail having developed the framework in terms of smart communities, we plan to establish, again, we are realistic because we will be just determining the framework. So we're planning to at least have two smart communities in the areas that we have rolled out broadband. That's our plan, and working together with our partners, NEMISA, in respect of training, so that again we align the programs of NEMISA, programs of MixCita, to produce the skills that will make sure that the municipalities that we are working on do have the necessary skills to be able to make use of the technologies that we are running in those areas. This is key to us because digital literacy is a bigger challenge that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, we're going to have white elephants. We have the infrastructure, but there's no usage of the infrastructure. So we want to embark on those programs to promote digital literacy. In respect of infrastructure, we have a target of connecting two municipalities this year, which is in OR Tambo and in Mbele in KZN. The question that we always get asked is how do we select these? You'd recall that these are the mandated areas for us to attend to that are responding or are aligned to the NHI side, and we get a mandate from the minister in terms of which areas to go to. You would see that in terms of the broadcasting part, we may appear as having set very minimal targets. There's a reason for that, which we have analyzed and came to a realistic set of targets for 17-18, bearing in mind that 17-18 ends in March 18. So, of course, we're going to have further targets up to December 18, because the deadline is, of course, December 18 for the BDM project. But we tried to be realistic for 17-18, given what confronts us in 17-18. Maybe to upfront before the questions come, we are all aware that we're still awaiting the ruling in terms of the Constitutional Court that will assist to clarify the specifics in terms of standards. But also we are working to clean up the procurement process that we have inherited and come up with a new process that should enable us to, within the limited budget, deliver what we are expected to deliver. That process is quite intensive as we're implementing that cleanup process in terms of the AG findings and recommendations. It may include other processes that are not within our control in respect of either National Treasury or the courts. So that's the kind of the process we're working on to clean up this process. We're hoping that if we all work together, which it appears after our engagements with the two ministers over the weekend, that we are all working together to ensure that we fast track this process. We should be able to then be on the same page on how to move forward, and we will be discussing that at the project management office and present our plan towards December 2018 to the two ministers in the next 2 weeks. So that's the rationale why then in respect of 17-18 we've set ourselves those targets. It could well be that if all everything goes positive, we may be able to do more than what we have set. But we don't want to repeat what we did before, where we have set targets for BDM that we were unable to deliver because of realities that are beyond our control. So now in this plan, we've tried to say, let's be realistic. If needs be, it is good to deliver more if everything works. But let us not set ourselves targets that we are not going to be able to achieve. That's in terms of yourself, and I'll ask CEO to just finalize the financials.
Okay, and thank you, CEO. In terms of the slide here where we show the financials going forward for USAF and the expenditure, I draw your attention to the column that is relevant here for today's presentation, which is the third from the right. The first item is basically the overall project cost. So this is the cost of actually executing now all the items which you will see below in terms of actual going out to do it. That is the 3.5 million that you see there. Now in terms of the actual programs that are going to be done, number one, the number of smart communities established, so that is number, that is two, and the allocation is 1 million rand. The number of the ICT training programs implemented, so we are looking at three, and that cost is the 2 million. The number of underserviced local municipal areas, this is now regarding to the broadband, so the actual cost of putting up the infrastructure, allocation there is 28.2 million. Moving down, the next slide is about the number of public institutions that will be utilized as anchor clients to these networks that then get established in these areas, that is four, as well as the free public Wi-Fi hotspots that I envisage to be deployed, and that is 40. In terms of now number six speaks to connectivity. So in terms of the maintenance of the connectivity, so the number of ICT centers will be 38, the number of clinics is the 197, and the number of schools are the 184, and the allocation to this is just short of 20 million rands for 2017-18, coming in at 19.865 million. And then the last one being the number of set-top boxes and antenna procured, as the CEO has said, we've kept it to be realistic in terms of the challenges that we have faced in terms of what can be achieved. So the allocation from the department for this project for 17-18 will be 79.098 million. Thank you.
Thanks, CFO. Just to conclude then, Chair, the backlog of the work that we have not been able to complete in 16-17, we've operationalized it. So, for example, if you look in terms of the BDM project, there's a lot of boxes that are sitting in the for post office warehouses. We've got a plan to make sure that we install those and activate those. So the backlog is in our operational plan. We have not put here in this master APP. So, Chairperson, that's our plan for 17-18, and as you can see that this is quite different in presentation in terms of from the previous one, and to enable and make it easy for you to monitor and oversee the work that we are doing. And you can see the strategies that we have put that clearly deals with some of the challenges that have been there in the past, which we are now hoping to not have those past experiences continuing going forward. So the plan is intended to deal with all those. And thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation, members. Can we now start to engage? Obusuela, Obutilen, Obusin, Obumakenzie, Obum, any such as I'm just thinking about Obusuela. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, let me start with the last OSASA, in terms of OSASA.
Well, in the APP, two municipalities have been identified for all out. And I guess these are new municipalities, they do exclude the previous one. But we had a terrible experience where we visited last time. I just hope that these new municipalities are not going to suffer the same fate that the Chief Albert Luturi municipality suffered, and hope that mistakes that were committed will be avoided going forward. The first question, though, that I want to ask is, in one of your objectives, you're talking about improving your brand and the reputation, and you set that at 40%. Now, is that not too low? You have a huge responsibility, and people need to be aware of your activities, but your target is as little as 40. Is that not too low? The second question would be, you also indicated in your closing remarks that you got a plan to deal with the backlog, and that the plan is not included in the APP. How are we going to monitor the implementation of that? Because we can only deal with what is in the APP in the main, but you're saying you got that plan, and maybe one should ask, where is the plan? How are we going to monitor progress in that regard? Now, with regard to CETA, we're talking about the employees, the composition of the employees that is going to decrease, seemingly because you are going to reduce your staff as well. How does that contribute to job creation? You are saying you are not going to fill the vacant position. Of course, the other one is natural attrition and all. But what I want to know, if you are not going to fill those positions, you are improving your efficiencies or maybe financial performance and so on. But how does that contribute to job creation? Again, your expenditure is expected to increase from 963 million to 1.2 billion, which is quite huge. And the reason cited, there's improved governance and compliance. Good. What then would be the expected return on this investment? Are you able to quantify it? Thank you, Chairperson. That would be all for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to start with the USASA and the USAF fund. Chairperson, first of all, I just want to say that if we read through the APP, the fact that USASA has conducted a SWOT analysis, it's a good thing. But what you have found is of a concern. Because if you're now presenting to us, this is your APP, knowing full well what your weaknesses are you still confident that, notwithstanding these weaknesses, for instance, lack of clarity of your role, in the sector, you've identified some weaknesses. So are you still confident that the use of fund, etc., will be utilized correctly and, in fact, achieve the goals that you are presenting to us today? Secondly, I once you have clarity, you say you based it on SIP 15, which means that we should have 100% access to ICTs in 2020. Now that's 3 years from now. With what you have presented to us today, are we on target to achieve 2020? Or do you want today to tell us that we will not achieve it? This is where we are, and these are the hurdles that you will find in your way, because we can't just go happily on. And 2020 is approaching. You're presenting every year, but we don't see progress towards superfluity. So if you can clarify that. Chairperson, then, I have a little bit of a concern about you, Sasa, and that is you've introduced, it seems to be, a new target on research papers, etc. Is that part of your core mandate? Don't we have many other institutions? Is that not the function of different entities? Is it really something that you should be concerned about? Do you have the right staff and the right skills? Jen, I unfortunately have to come back to our oversight visit, and I know the chairperson of the board would not have wanted me to do that. But you know, having been on there where the tire meets the tar, I'm not convinced with what we have been presented with today. Do you have the people to manage? We don't have project managers. I mean, for us to have gone out to Burgersfort and those areas to go and see what has been happening there. And by the way, your target of 80% BEE compliance, it's a good one. But the point is, whoever is your service provider, we must make sure that they actually provide the service to the standard level. And that will depend on whether you have the people internally in USASA to develop the tender documentation with the right specifications. If we don't have that internally in your agency, we will continue to see government failures. Because we must remember, you are funded 100% with public funding. So you are an arm of government. It's not an agency that is soliciting additional funding. It's an agency working with public funding. So your efficiency levels, how can you convince us that you are going to be efficient? Chairperson, I just wanted to quickly have a look. Yeah, your SWOT analysis is in fact contained in your fund document. I have a concern if I look at slide 18 and slide 19, and maybe it's just because it comes out oddly on an iPad. You know, so much for going digital. But sometimes you can't see the slide, you know, the entire slide. Something is cut off somewhere. But I can't see that we in fact calculate what we have. We have different, can I just quickly check? Slide 18, you're saying that you want to maintain the existing sites, connected sites. You make mention of 38 ICT centers, 93 clinics, and 129 educational institutions. Is that for the entire year? Now, if I look at what you have had in 2014-2015, you presented during that year, okay, you only achieved 38, but if we calculate, are your figures adding up? I'm concerned we've been presented in the past with school connectivity, with clinic connectivity, with Wi-Fi hotspots, but they somehow just disappear from the skyline. Somehow they don't just disappear. It is as though there's not a comprehensive system to manage and maintain and be able to report on every one of them. Because what does it help if government provides money annually for rollout and we must achieve 100% connectivity in 2020, but we don't maintain what we have already developed? We will never achieve it, Jefferson. So I really am very concerned. Can you please explain whether that is comprehensive, whether you have a system to monitor what is happening? Because otherwise our rollout and additional funding is futile. Coming to CETA, I just wanted to ask CETA the following. First of all, I'm very happy to hear that they are confident that the budget that they put forward today, the estimates, is not a thumbsuck one. Because remember where you come from, Honorable CEO, you've had difficulty in the past. And it's always good to see where we are in terms of international ranking. So I like your slide that you presented, and you focused on where we are achieving as a country and where our weaknesses are. And you're actually figuring out what we should do to turn it around, which I really like very much. Have you, however, determined, if you want to achieve e-government, have you done any survey across departments to determine the levels of proficiency with ICT? Is it not a concern that in some of the departments we actually may have very serious resistance against going digital? And how do you foresee we will be able to overcome that? Have you done such a survey? If not, do you intend to do it? And then your supply chain management. You've illustrated, I think it's slide 17 on your presentation, how you will move forward, because also as far as CETA is concerned, we've had major problems. I mean, have you identified the corrupt elements and sections within CETA so that you can plug those holes where money just flew to the wrong people without, in fact, delivering? And how will it tie up with a centrally managed tender system that we will see? How do you align your procurement with that? Chair, there was one question that I missed, but that note's fine. I will, if you will allow me, I would like to come back to that one later.
Thank you, Chair. Seeing everybody started with yourself, so I'll start there as well. Just a matter of clarity first on this document, which is the USAF one that was tabled, which is obviously the document to which we hold you accountable. On page 21, we have a look at a program one operations. Now, bearing in mind at the top of this figure, up top of this little table, you've got R and three zeros. So I'm presuming that the figures in there are odd, because you then have, as your project costs for this year, 3.5 billion rand. Is that correct? Because then there's this, which I presume is the same table that carries on to the next page. If we add up all your project costs for this year, it comes to 133 billion rand, which I'm sure is incorrect. So I'm assuming that the triple noughts on top of the first column, the first page, shouldn't be there. Am I right? Okay. So you suddenly haven't got an injection of billions. Wishful thinking here. Okay, so we can just clear that up. Then I'm wanting to know, there have been announcements And my question will pertain to USASA, SAFA, broadband info, CETA, sorry, not SAFA so much, but the other three, is to what has happened to SA Connect, which seems to take a very, very low profile in all of the presentations. It's hardly mentioned at all. USASA, you mentioned it as one of the two projects that you're going to be rolling out, where we're supposed to have had 8 up and running by now, but we all know what the problem with the tender for SA Connect was. But one of the sites you talked about was Mpendla in KZN. Now, from your other documentation and from my previous documentation, Mpendla is not one of the KZN NHI sites that was listed 2 years ago when SA Connect was launched. So I'm wondering what's happened to the other two KZN sites, and whether this is a new one or is it just part of one of those other sites under a different name. Now, you have very ambitious targets. You talk about achieving things at 98% and 100%. Yet your targets for staff improvement are very, very low. So how are you going to achieve all these targets with your staff improvement targets really increasing by 30%, by 60% over the time? If you've got relying on your staff to meet these targets, and your staff targets are so low, how do you gel this? I'm assuming this would be impossible. And you know, when we look at your staff weakness, your HR, when you table two things, you know. Page 13 on this one. Your major weakness in the organisation is human resources. All power to you if you think you're going to get your staffing right. But I would think as the future of the entity is diminishing, as it were, you're not going to have much of luck, I should think, in improving that. You talked about a meeting with the two ministers this past weekend. Can you please tell us whether you were given any clarity on the statements that were made last week and reported in the media, but nothing official on either website, about a new internet program? It's going to be this is from Mr. Twele about connecting people to internet, and it's a World Economic Forum, government and private sector initiative. And obviously that is to roll out, I would assume, or to pick up the SA Connect program. There's no details on it. Were you given details, and if so, would you be able to share them with us? The other apparently statement made by the Minister of Communications at last week's conference in Durban was that the set-top box encryption issue is going to be reversed to the pre-2015 BDM policy, which obviously throws out the Constitutional Court hearing. It does all sorts of other things with the set-top boxes that you already have in storage, which were made without the encryption facility. Can you please tell us if you know anything about the future of this, whether the minister told you about what she's going to do about the Constitutional Court, and what's going to happen to all of those. At the end of last year, the Minister of Communications was going to submit a total project cost for the rest of the rollout of the STV BDM policy to submit to Treasury. Did you see that? Can you tell us what the total costs of the project are still to be to finality? I'll leave it there for USASA. Then CETA. CETA, you're lean and mean guys now. This is the finished document we've had, and I think it shows a new management style, and good luck to you with your new plan on how it's all going to be managed, procurement and services going to be managed. It sounds efficient, and obviously your challenge is going to be seeing that the government departments actually do use the procurement system properly and honestly. You mentioned cloud computing and government cloud, but you don't mention anything about the initiative between yourselves and Inspur, the Chinese cloud company. which the minister told us last week was one of the department's strategic priorities. Can you please tell us what discussions you're in with INSPER? Because I would be most keen to know. You talk about your main, there's only really five major government departments that work with you. You talked somewhere in here. Page 60, I think it was. Wondering what, CETA's expenditure concentrated in 10 major services from five key customers. Can you please just spell out who those are? And also, again, there's no mention in here of SA Connect, and you were the main tender procurers last year. Can you tell us what role you will be playing in SA Connect? And one assumes that USAS is going to be playing a major role in the procurement here. I'm just trying to find out how this program is happening. Then ICT security, which is a major issue. You give scant attention to it in your report. Can you tell us what you're doing to attract, retain major ICT security skills? Well, obviously this would be a huge priority for you, I would think, because this is government data and citizens' data that's in your application. If you could see tell me if this is a strategic priority for you and why you're actually paying so little attention, it would seem to it, in this document. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll also start with USASA. Our favourite target for this morning. You mentioned I'll give you the page now. on your program, One Business Support, an improved stakeholder satisfaction level of 50%. Who are those stakeholders that you're talking about there under improved brand and reputation? Who are those stakeholders? I presume we're included in that. And I would question the use of 50% as a level of satisfaction. I can't think of anybody that would be happy with a 50% satisfaction level for any kind of service or stakeholder engagement. So perhaps you could just give me a comment on that. Then your strategic objective, increased digital literacy through the establishment of smart villages. Your ICT training programs, you did in your presentation allude to NAMESA. I would imagine that is NAMESA's job and not yours, because that entity, as far as I understand it, was specifically set up for that purpose. That is their core mandate. And if they are doing this training, this ICT training, or you're contracting them to do so, why would it fall under your strategic plan? Or are you doing that yourselves and duplicating their effort? Then on the following page, Program 1 Operations, after our oversight visit, and there's another report coming before the board on that, as you know, it was not by any means what you could consider to be a successful oversight visit, because of the representation of what you do or what you're supposed to do, it was a dismal failure. All the sites we saw, the infrastructure we saw, the money that had been spent, the connectivity, when you go to weddings or something or stag parties and people start praising the bridegroom and then you say, how the hell can we believe you? You lie. And when I look at your aims, that line of that song just comes into my mind when you talk about utilizing anchor clients or connecting underserviced local municipal areas or free public Wi-Fi hotspots deployed. how are you ever going to do that based on what we saw during our oversight? I can't see any one of these objectives as being credible. Then perhaps you could just help me. I'm only new here. And there's a history with set-top boxes, but just looking at the number of set-top boxes and antenna procured, the numbers just don't seem to make sense to me, and perhaps you could explain it to me. I'm a quite a simple man. For 58,460 set-top boxes, you're paying 589 million. And then for 181,000 set-top boxes, you're paying 79 million in 2017-18. And then in 2018-19, for 191,000 set-top boxes, you're paying 287 million. I just don't understand those figures. If perhaps I'm missing something. If you could explain that to me. And then, Sita, Dr. Mahaki. Never forget that one session where I still kept calling you out on Centec numbers because that brand association is just so strong. Expanding your capacity in systems development across government and government departments, what's your view on the standards that are in place at the moment? And I'm referencing MIOS here. Is this an obstacle to what you intend to do, and how can you deal with this? I'm just trying to gauge a scale of the extent of that problem, and also in terms of the standards applied. When was an audit last done, or a comprehensive audit of ICT in government departments? Is there such a thing? Is there a macro overview of that? Then in terms of the change in procurement systems, have you seen the benefit of that coming through in your organization in terms of increased orders and increased revenue and increased profit? And can you just give us an indication of that? Also, given the new procurement system, and I would imagine it works fairly efficiently, have you seen an uptake or an increase in interest from state-owned companies, and are they using your portal? Then lastly, the government paper published on e-government in the Government Gazette a couple of weeks ago. CETA has a large role to play, or certainly envisaged at the outset in that draft, has a very large role to play in the rolling out of e-government services and the provision of e-government services, including the main portal into government website portal. Are you comfortable with the challenge that's being thrown at you with that you will be able to deliver? Because I do notice in that paper the timelines are very tight. They're all talking around 2017, 2018, with a little bit of an extension into 2019. So are you geared up, and are you ready for that, and are you comfortable that you can rise to that challenge? Thank you, Chairperson. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to start to you, Sasa. It's only one question, as I have been covered then. On your budget, you allocated a compensation of employees at 63%. Can you please tell us why you allocate a huge a budget in salaries? Only you just over 37% less for goods and services. Can you please explain to us why you have a month of salary? And then I'm going to say tax. Sita, your strategic objective is to transform the organization into customer-centric entity. You have set a target of 70% customer satisfaction for the 2017-18 financial year. Can you please explain to us
What are the challenges on achieving more than 90% customer satisfaction, and what are you going to do to ensure that those challenges are adequately addressed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'll just ask a few more questions. Most of them will be alluded to. Maybe I'll pose it differently. In this world of 70% customer service has been alluded to, and one would anticipate that, or assume that you anticipate some hurdles on your way not to perform maybe above 70%. What are those hurdles to anticipate, and moving forward, and strategies to deal with them and try to improve on the 70%? And in as far as the services to provide to a department concerned, do they cooperate with the payment of such services? And if not, to what extent will that impact on your projections? And also one on the data that was asked by Osmo Gongeni about the 60% salary. Will this not impact negatively on your target? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Very quickly, I'll just give an overview, and then I'll hand over to my team to answer some of the questions. I see what's coming through the common thread is the oversight visit at Mpumalanga. And it's, on behalf of the board, we want to apologize for what happened there. And it reminds me of some of us, when we're going to school, and they say the inspector is coming to the school. You'd know what would happen. You know, the teachers, they even strip the floors. Everything becomes so well. The kids, they polish the shoes. When the inspector comes, even a teacher that normally comes at 10, everybody's there. And they are taking through the classrooms and so on. That's how we grow up, you know. So I'm saying, don't look at it as if we didn't actually respect you, you know. Things didn't go okay, but we had emphasized that things must be well, you know. Even the sites that were identified by USASA management, those sites were sites, I know they were close in proximity, and they wanted to make your tour seamless. And some things happened there. There'll be a report that still we need to give you on that. I think we owe you a report just to actually, you know, because of the report which we are discussing, and there's consequence management, and after that report will come to you. Because I think if we don't do that, it's not good. It talks to our reputation. And then he talked to all the things there that we want to actually achieve, because at the back of your mind, exactly, you know, you were doubting. Then the issue around our human resources is quite a serious thing. It's a very serious thing at USASA, and we've got a union as well who, you know, we don't know whether the tail is wagging the dog or what, you know, CWU. This union is actually, some union members are even management. I've never seen that. So, and they are leaders in the union. So it's quite a very serious thing. We're dealing with it as a board. We dealt with it even during the weekend. We said we cannot have union leaders who are part of executive management. We cannot have that. So the CEO is dealing with that. We've given those union leaders deadlines to say, not necessarily to actually resign completely from the union, but they can be leaders. You can't be a manager and a leader. You can't. So, and it came out there when we're discussing sensitive issues, they are sitting there and they are arming themselves to discuss things with the union instead of discussing issues with the staff. So it's a conflict of interest. It's something that was there. It's a legacy issue. We need to deal with it decisively because that's the core of our problem. And if then we've got issues around performance at USASA, I must say that, you know, it's
it's I don't want to actually put a blanket to all the government departments and say this is how they are. But, you know, if you've got people who've been there for 20 years, they've been doing things the same way they are doing it. And you can see there's no urgency. When we say things must be done this way, they get shocked and say, you know, why, and so on. So we need to deal with that very decisively as a board through the CEO and the executives. And this year, for instance, we've looked even at the way of reporting, you know, how reporting must change so that it addresses the things that we want instead of getting a 500-page document and you go through the maze of documents. So it's going to be very hard-hitting in terms of what we want. And I want to say to you, if it happens that it creates organizational instability in terms of some people being asked to leave, you must understand it from that context, because we cannot leave things as they are. Exactly. If things are the status quo as it is, there is no way these targets are going to be achieved, you know, because the drivers, we rely on them a lot. So really, so what we've put here is not necessarily out of kilt, and there's going to be initiatives in terms of performance to drive things, and unfortunately, we are going to be at collision course with the union, and we hope to get your support when some managers are fired because of not necessarily of being a union member, but of not doing what we're supposed to do, because we can't pay people for doing other stuff. So these are the things we're dealing with. I just wanted to address as well the question of the two ministers that were there. I want to say Mr. Kwele was very excited about the deliberations at the WIF conference, and the agency that was displayed by companies like Google and so on, all those type of companies, IBM, and for them wanting to be part of the training and also ICT solution. And the minister was saying he's going to grab the opportunity with his officials and they are going to be doing something. So USASA will part, I suppose, of that broad church where all these companies are going to be involved. That is going to help us a lot, because as we go through to 2020, the deficit is very huge. There was a question 2.5 years, but that 2.5 we talked to all the partners being involved from BBI, etc. And that's what has been missing, you know, in terms of getting everybody, and we actually go all of us same direction. I think with corporate partnership through these big companies with their sort of best practice from across the world, I don't think it's impossible for us to achieve. So really, I think things, as agency, things are going to be are going very fast, I suspect. Because I could see the minister, he would think, you know, this is going to happen. But the bigger picture, I think, we are going to be getting from him. And then as far as, what's happening with the new minister of the OC, Minister Ayanda Dodong, she was in that meeting, for instance, first and foremost, as a fact-finding gathering exercise. So a lot of presentation was made on the journey of digital migration, and she came with her team. She asked a lot of questions, and one can sense that she wants to act very quickly. So she's going to be announcing her stand as far as digital migration. And I think we've equipped her sufficiently with the legalities, etc., in the meeting. So I think all of us will expect her to announce something. Then USASA is going to follow that direction, if it's a different direction, as soon as possible. So that's as far as I can say, man. Mm-hmm. And can I ask my team to then answer all the other questions that were raised?
Thanks, Chair. You've made our life easier. Indeed, honourable members, through your chair, there are legacy issues that we have to deal with, and as the chair says, we are dealing with those. It's informed by that we're not ambitious enough in terms of our plans. Maybe let me put it differently. We're not setting targets that are beyond how we can manage the process. We are allowing the transition, and therefore not set targets of 100%, knowing that we have got these legacy issues that we're dealing with. So we've tried to be realistic. We just tried to follow the SMART principles. And we invite you, we hope you can find time to go to OR Tambo, where we've been working on this year. You will see, you will have a different picture than the Mpumalanga picture. But of course, it's a regrettable picture, but we are investing in trying to take stock of what has happened, where have been the challenges. For example, you find if a service provider has been contracted to roll out infrastructure and the connectivity element was not attached to it, then of course you will have the infrastructure. It's not like money is lost. The money is there, be it the fixed wireless network, be it mobile network. The network is there in all the areas. What seemed to have been the biggest gap has been connectivity. And those are the lessons that we've learned, and we are dealing with those going forward, and hence the plan that we're presenting. So, honorable members, the first question you raised was related to the outstanding work. You will see when we come to present our annual report, or maybe quarter four, that where the biggest problem has been with respect to BDM targets. That has affected our, this is now for USAF. I think for USASA you'll be impressed. We have improved from where we were when we last came. But for USAF, we have been able to move in respect of broadband connectivity, but as you would understand in respect of BDM, we moved just as it relates to the installations. But in terms of production, we have suspended those processes, etc. So that affects our targets for BDM in terms of 2016-17. But we will be reporting to yourself. Fortunately, in the last year, you have also had sessions that focus on like either BDM or broadband, and we will be reporting in terms of those sessions. But also in our quarterly reports, we will report how we've carried forward the work from previous financial year that was not achieved in the APP. So definitely you will see and you'll be able to monitor that. Part of my response in terms of brand repetition speaks to that. I think the chair has spoken to the question of capacity that I think different members spoke to. Indeed, the human resources is our biggest challenge, and we are trying to invest in trying to develop strategies to manage that. Hence, therefore, you will see some of our targets not being the expected targets. SIP 15, I think the chair also has spoken to this, that it's the target of 2020 is not just for USASA. That's the SIP 15 target, and all of us, the DPS and its entities, are working towards that direction. So it's not just the USASA. For USASA, our targets are as per the APP. In respect of research, it's not a new the mandate, honorable member. It is in the law. We have been expected in terms of the law to do conduct research and advise the minister in respect of policy. So that's where we derive this task from. What we have set ourselves is targets having regard to the capacity that we don't have, and we are striking partnerships. We have discussions and MOUs and MOAs that that we're discussing with CSIR and around partnering in this area. So we're hoping to achieve those minimal targets through our work plus the partnerships that we are discussing. You also asked questions in terms of the capacity, the relook at our human resource management to deliver the strategy includes looking at the project management skills, the contract management skills, and how best we make sure that we invest in those and avoid having the challenges that we experienced in the oversight visit. With respect to the connectivity challenges, honourable member, what we have put here is informed by our approach going forward. What we are rolling out, for example, in OR Tambo, is packaged with connectivity, and that is contracted accordingly. One of the lessons we learned from the Mpumalanga experience, for example, is if we do not have a network management system, we're not able to monitor from where we are and be able to generate our own reports. So we rely on the reports that we get from the service providers. We are discussing with our partners in the space because these are, in some instances, these are licensed service providers. So we're discussing with ICASA to see what kind of a relationship we can have with ICASA to add value to this work so that we can be able to whilst we do not have the system money for investing in the system at ISASA, we work with the likes of the ISASA to see if we can be able to share information and also share the monitoring capacity thereof. And I've seen in respect of the impact, there is a new mandate that we have been asked by the minister to add to our plan. OR Tambo is, of course, part of the site, but we've been asked to also then cover that municipality because of the challenges in that municipality. The chair has already answered in respect of the internet for all. I think the minister will accordingly pronounce once we have concretized whatever work that needs to be done. And in respect of the total project cost for BDM, what we agreed to is to go back to the drawing board as the team. So we will be meeting as the team, which by the team I mean the different players in the scheme of ownership, which includes DOC as the leader, Centec, post office, ourselves. We will be meeting again to relook, because you'd recall on the machine that last year when we asked for those additional funding for the total the cost going forward, we didn't get those. So we didn't get additional funding from National Treasury. So we're going back to the drawing board, also having regard to the approaches that we are dealing with in respect of cleaning the process. Possibly out of that approach, we're likely to have revised projections in terms of figures. And we are also engaging CETA to see if we can partner in respect of e-procurement to clean up the process and be able to be fast and deliver as expected in terms of the project. So we'll only come back to you with details of this after the revision, after we've had our discussions as the project management office. Yes, honourable member, the stakeholder includes yourself, and we obviously dreaming to have 100% satisfaction, and we're working towards that. But for the purpose of this plan, having regard to the current challenges, the legacy challenges, when we finalized this plan, the context was different to today. Today we've got new leadership, for example, at DOC, and we've got improved working relationships that should help us to then do our work as planned. So it could well be that we will exceed that target, but it is more realistically planned in the context of where we were at the time of finalizing this plan. In respect of training, no, not duplication. We've had to put training in our plan, partly because when we roll out this infrastructure, part of the mandate and obligations of the service providers is training. So therefore, we can't not have training. So it's not duplication. It's clear training that needs to be there. Otherwise, it's going to be white elephants. But in addition to that, we've aligned our work. We are to sign an MOU with NEMISA so that their training is adding value to what we are doing over and above whatever else in their plans. So yes, indeed, we're going to be working with them in the 7 municipalities that we have connected. Their eco labs are going to be aligned to add value to where we are in terms of broadband rollout. I'll leave the last 2 questions left in terms of the set-top boxes and the figures and the compensations and Dogeni's questions.
Thank you, CEO. Honourable members, you will remember that when I first met all of you in October 2016, it was only my second day on the job, and one of the promises that I made was that that I would drive for improvement in the organisation. In order to do that, one has to look back in the past and see what has happened. So in terms of unravelling the honourable member's question in terms of the averages, let me try to explain. When we see there listed the 1.5 million, we need to understand that it means both an STB, a set-top box, and the accompanying antenna, or the dish, the satellite dish. So there is a price difference between the antenna, which is married to a DTT box, as well as you marry a DTH box to a satellite dish. So hence, and then even within the DTT and the DTH boxes, there's another complication is that one needs a SIM card and one doesn't. So that also affects the cost. So hence, that averaging, isn't appropriate and works out. And then the next point is with regards to the compensation. I think one also needs to remember that while the compensation on the USASA is obviously, if you look at the percentages, it is high in terms of the total percentage of that expenditure, one also needs to remember that if you take into account the USAF, USAF doesn't have any salaries. So if one would look at marrying the USASA expenditure and the USAF expenditure and then work out the percentage of the compensation over that total expenditure, then that number doesn't then look as high as it did if we just look at the USASA expenditure total. Thank you.
That concludes all our questions, Chair.
All the responses from the two by USASA from the two. Let's go to Peter and we'll make a follow-up with those two boys.
representative.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair members. The first question, this is the labor cost and then about job creation. So indeed, our suggestion, the second one deals with overall expenditures and returns. And the overriding theme there is that we have identified that we can be more efficient when we look at the productivity of a number of cost items, one being the productivity of labor costs, and another one being the productivity of the external cost. So, and this, the public policy question for us is, what is the fundamental job? The second object of CETA says that we must transfer operational efficiencies into government. And for us to do so, it means that we must operate efficiently internally. So we are asking, instead of filling vacancies, we are asking our staff members to do more than what they're doing now. And we know and we accept that, because they write to us a lot, that there is a lot of scope for them to do more. So especially young people, we find young people there who say, we've been hired, we are on a fixed-term contract, but we want to do more. So that's number one, about filling vacancies. It doesn't mean that we will not fill vacancies when we need to, but we start with the premise that let's do more out of it, let's increase our productivity. On the other hand, to answer then the socio-economic question about job creation, there are certain expenses that go up there, because we're also saying that we need to increase our scope of operation. And I think the application development environment is probably illustrates this more, that it's one thing to look at job creation inside CETA, but it's another thing to look at job creation in society in general. So if we do e-government well, in alignment with the e-government, the e-strategies and the e-government framework that has just been published by the department, then we know that there's a lot more work that has to be done than even CETA, the capacity that exists, that can be done by the capacity that exists in CETA. So for example, remember on that page there, where we show, let's just go through to it very quickly. On page 14, we show the row number 2, which is the row that illustrates the way government departments interact, for example, with citizens. Those are the frontline offices. And one looks at the way of interacting is through a lot of forms. We fill lots of paper there. An inventory was done of the number of forms that people have to fill, and I think the number came to 1,900. And we've had projects to try and digitize those forms. And at best, we have been doing, let's say, 10 per hour, but not even deploying them into government departments. Now, for us to digitize that interface at this rate, it means it will take us 190 years to complete that, if we're just trying to do it on our own. And I always say that after 190 years, we'll all be comfortable to retire somewhere. But we don't have that time. And the best way to do it is to make use of the best that the country has in terms of capacity. And so we can do job creation through engaging better, more efficiently, and in a structured way with the external market, and covering the entire base of big companies and small companies, because that particular area, there were number 2, the number of things, the opportunities, particularly for SMEs. But yesterday I had a meeting with 2 groupings of SMEs, and one of the areas of interest was, at least both of them, 2 representatives from both sides, was where are the opportunities for application development. And that was part of our conversation when we went on the industry roadshow last year. So we think that
There are vast opportunities in this program here for creating jobs outside of CETA, and for also still making CETA to run as efficiently, in the efficient way that it was created to be. So that talks to also the nature of returns. Yes, indeed, there are metrics, financial returns that are reflected here, but I think I've just talked about the other socioeconomic returns that we can certainly quantify with this approach. Then, on the question on departments, and if I may refer to that, readiness, willingness, and readiness for taking this journey of new government. Our first point of interaction is the government IT officers of Council, GTOC. And we've had sessions with them about exactly this journey. And I must say there was a lot more excitement in that interaction than the interaction that I first had with them where they were dealing about some other matters there. In fact, during a session there, I asked for, and they responded on that we immediately brainstorm 5 e-services that are cross-departmental e-services that we can put into our program. And in fact, there was a brainstorm on that, including services that are of interest to provincial COXTAs. There was a very nice one there that was proposed there. So the thing is that there is willingness, I think. This is not the first time that we are trying to do e-government. About 15 years ago, there was e-government documents that were around. We put up House of Values and so on and so forth. But really nothing much came out of it there. I think the key is for us, CETA, to play the role that has been set for us in the act. The number of departments do ask us to be thought leaders. The number of business leaders in the department, that is from the technology side, and the number of the business leadership in the departments also ask us to come up with business solutions to government problems. And I think the question has been whether we have configured ourselves to be such. And I think the numbers that we gave earlier suggest that we did not. We configured ourselves to be more of an IT operations function as opposed to a consultant function. And I'll come back to that on customer satisfaction as well. But one should not be naive to say, to think that there won't be resistance. I think one should be prepared for that. It's a risk, and one should have measures to deal with that risk. Then on SCM and matters of graft, we have instituted, I think I've suggested this before, a deeper look into that environment. We're calling it a forensic investigation. It is ongoing right now. And it's quite comprehensive. And we have found things already in there. Some people have already left the organization as a result, are dismissed. We have submitted already to the SAPS, to the Hawks, and we have had conversations, formal conversations with the asset forfeiture unit as well. And that's an ongoing thing. And we're quite certain that a number of these programs, for example, on automation and so on and so forth, will not succeed until we go to the those kind of methods. So that's where we're paying a lot of attention. Question again on how does the system tie up with the centralized procurement. The two parts, the from a norms and standards point of view, we are doing the same with National Treasury. The automation system. And then from a systems point of view, we are linking with the National Treasury's central supplier database. In the picture there, you'll see that there's a little block on the right, bottom right side that links to the national, the CSD. then on SA Connect, our role on SA Connect is really defined by the CETA Act. To the extent, Section 7, I mean, not just to go to the law too much, but the network services represent services that certain national and provincial governments should get from CETA. And there's a clear intention in the Act that the state must have its own network and for internally to provide, to be controlled by it. So our role in SA Connect is to be the service provider in the normal sense, but with the other strategic objectives, meaning that to the extent that the basic, the first user of the network will be government departments, then we will provide the network services. The tender that went out was a tender for the access network, or the last one that would have connected to the normal CETA core network. And then we would have gone up and also upgraded the internet bandwidth. But the same last mile could then be used to fulfill the other strategic objectives, because the infrastructure would not be owned by CETA. It would still be owned by the whoever won the tender. And then government would be an anchor customer through CETA on that last mile. And then that would probably then the de-risk the ability of the that service provider then to provide services into those still communities in the rural areas. That essentially was the business model and the tender. And our role still, as far as we understand, is still the same, because it's largely controlled by the Act. We have not put it here. We have not put any kind of targets on SA Connect, because I think of what was intimated by USASA, that the driver is still the department. At the time when we are writing this, we are finalizing our strategic plan, there were discussions that were still ongoing on how to then deal or try to fulfill the objectives in a different way, if possible. But we, to the much as the department may be having discussions with other SOCs based on the stated intention of using other entities as alternatives, we have separate discussions with the department because of the way we are regulated, because of the role that we play as defined in the Act. Then on cloud computing, there was mention of INSPER. I do understand that some members of our staff have met with them, and my understanding is that there were two discussions there. There was a discussion around data centers, and then there was another discussion around chipsets that could be locally designed and locally manufactured in order to provide us with more control. And that is more linked with us building the manufacturing capability to produce our own end user devices. And my understanding is that discussion has not gone any further than the initial parts of it. We can provide more information on the specifics of that discussion. I was not a part of it. The government departments, major government departments of CETA is SEPS, DOD, National Treasury, and National Treasury because it's the custodian of all the enterprise resource planning systems, your BES and LOGIS and so on and so forth, on behalf of other departments. And then Home Affairs and also the DOG. And then on ICT security, sometimes we are, I must say, notwithstanding the fact that the section is very, very thin, that's probably also for a reason not to say too much about the very same thing that you're trying to use to fight people trying to attack you. But there's a lot of effort on that right now. Through our audit and risk committee now, we vacated as a SANMA for that business case, doing a comprehensive risk assessment of all the entire IT environment, which will then inform a comprehensive overhaul of all the ICT operations. And that's something that will be done by the end of this year. And then on skills, I think the issue is applies to all skills, but this one is a particular painful one because the skills are globally, there's not much of them globally, ICT security that is. But and it's even more tough for us because we our brand, and the question was mentioned there, our brand, we did a brand audit. Our brand is not very strong, not surprisingly. And it's not easy to attract people. But we have done certain things. We're taking a slightly different approach to go to the service providers that are in our database, that are, you know, typical recruitment companies, and work with them. Because we have to sell a CETA of the future, not the CETA that is reflected in the current brand audit. And there are ways and means of doing that. Some of these skills can ask people to come and do public service in the national interest. They don't have to leave their jobs. One can still be working in a bank where ICT security is important, and you come and work for us without losing your entire benefits. So those are the kind of discussions that we're going into the market with. The approach that we've been taking not engaging prior, not marketing ourselves from an HR perspective, definitely is not working. We are not getting the options, the options that we normally need to have to implement this this plan. Then on the capacity to expand, yes indeed, there are a number of things, standards. Mails has not been updated in a long time. It has to be updated. There are software development methodologies that are quite old that have to be introduced. There are new methods of developing that we have not introduced, for example, methods that allow for rapid application development, rapid prototyping, and so on and so forth. It has been accepted that we have to take a different approach to that. And we are going to, instead of trying to do it ourselves, because we don't know sometimes what we don't know, we are going to go into the market soon to go and get the necessary assistance. But this whole thing around e-government, we are going to have probably in the first week of June an e-government industry day where we are bringing the industry. We're going to be asking questions of the industry, even asking questions that they want us to ask, and then bring everybody together for 2 days, and then we brainstorm methods, whether it's on human resources, how do we pool the human resources of the country, how do we pool the small businesses, SMMEs, into this journey. How do we create and use capacity resident in the provinces so that people don't have to move to how to in order for them to participate in the government work? How to manage the migration of all the legacy applications and so on and so forth with the industry? And thereafter, we'll then have a much more industry-based implementation plan for our journey. And part of that then will be how are people developing things faster than us out there. In terms of the audit, yes, in fact, there hasn't been an audit of ICT, not a full audit of ICT equipment or even hardware and software. Within CETA, we did that in 2015 of all our software and hardware, and that informed our modernization plan, which was done in January, approved by the board in January, which then informed our approach to cloud computing, we've already have our departments that have moved to cloud computing, so we already have a cloud computing presence in Gauteng, and we're just expanding that. But the bigger one we're doing with DPSA now. We have a project team with DPSA to do a comprehensive audit of all the IT things in government, so that we can then have a comprehensive similar type of program for all hardware and software in government, given that we only do 40% of the IT work, so there's still quite a lot of things that are being done outside of SITA. So, and this will allow us to rationalize our environment as well. G-commerce, the not yet, revenue and so on and so forth, but certainly I think my colleague from USASA has already answered that question, saying that there's an interested customer that does not have to use SITA, but I think has sees an interest, USASA sees an interest in using this thing for a number of reasons. The other party that I mentioned that used the SITA G-commerce platform is not obliged to use SITA as well, as I said. And they say this is the way to go. So the program essentially is, again, it's a value proposition. Create something that people want that is useful to them, build that, and then we know that people will pay for things that are useful. So the business plan is there. We do the financial business plan is there, and the numbers that we're talking about will come in the second and third year. I mean, we want to do it's an investment-based business plan to deal also with the past and our own brand issues. In terms of our readiness to fulfill the role that are contained in the e-government papers of government, I think we already prepared ourselves. We last year we created an e-government program. Essentially, we took the people who are doing development from the different areas of operations and put them under one management, and they operate in one location. And in fact, the output, e-government output, as will be discussed when we deal with the annual report of 16-17, we did more than we have ever done before, and as a result of this change in our operating environment, we're expanding that, and we're using different innovation, innovating a little bit. For example, a few weeks ago, we ran a hackathon with Elcita, based on volunteers, and the volunteers spent the whole weekend not sleeping and producing a lot of innovation. Things that if you were to only do them top down, you'd never get that. And in fact, we have given all of those people who participated in that hackathon an opportunity to move into e-government. There was one lady who was moving and going to CSR, Pomozo. And 5 days before that, she said, no, I don't want to go to CSIR. I want to be part of this journey. And she is now part of our e-government team. So, and there are different ways of doing it. Coming back to the question about government departments as well, we are going to innovate around that to create a different vibe. Application development is a different thing. You need to have a lot of energy and things. I mean, in Western Cape now, we have a lady who has been here. We kept working in Cape Town from Bloemfontein. She wanted to leave SITA because she didn't have she wanted to go back home. And she's now going back home to SITA and to set up an e-government center of excellence there. So we think we'll be ready. Together with our industry, the way we're engaging with the industry, we think we'll be able to succeed there. And then on the issue of customer satisfaction, that brings us back to reality. It is a challenge. We should be aiming for more because the service level agreement between government and citizens should not be 70%, it should be higher than 70%. And we are a contributor to anything that is either up positively or down negatively. Meaning that to the extent that we're not serving government departments well, it means that government is not serving citizens as well. And when we have been having a bit of challenges, I think as members are aware, in a number of interventions, I think on the 30th of May, there is another joint session with the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. And prior to that, there's another one with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And we have to keep trying to do the right thing. address the shortcomings in terms of sensitivity to public service, in terms of skill, in terms of managing, giving people like Pomoso, people like Tandi from Bloemfontein, the opportunity to do things that we know they want to do. They don't want to live here, they want to work here and contribute to public service using that talent. And we understand the challenges there. But on the other hand, we have to do it top down as well. And look at structural problems. And in that respect, especially with the latter, I'm aiming for a structurally high customer service levels. The board has, we've been working, the board has, or rather the organization has been working on a new business model, which I think there are two fundamental things that come out of there that address customer satisfaction and customer satisfaction, let me say. Because the feedback, ever since I mean, the documents that I want to see from 2012, 2014, and even the recent documents, there's a big gap in CETA's inability to be a thought leader and almost work as a consultant to government, almost anticipate, work with the business owner in government to say, here is a business problem, here is a solution that I can create for that business problem. Understanding and empathizing with the DDG or the chief director on the public, particular public service mandate of that department. Now that is not there. We have changed our operating, or the operating model is changing such that the interface to government is is people who are more consultants than just technical people or just pure relationship management people. So the person, every person that we put in front of a customer should be able to lead a customer towards or a department towards a solution, and should have enough breadth of technical skills, should have enough breadth of understanding of socio-economic issues, should have enough maturity to deal with the complexities of working within a government department to provide the right solution. If we get that right, then we are quite sure, certain that we'll get everything else right. The second intervention is on the technical side of things. And there we have split, or the suggestion is to please split the two areas. Look at the one that deals with the hosting and application environment, then get the right people for that, and then look at another one that deals with network and infrastructure and get the right people for that. And that was not the case, I mean, the last time, at least 2 years there. So the suggestion of a change in structure that should be, that has certainly been endorsed through the various board interactions and will be approved fairly soon. Probably within a week or so. Once we have that, then you still have to have the right people in leadership positions in particular, because you can have the right strategy, you can have the right strategy. And this is why we believe that we have changed our approach to the market. The issue about empathizing with what government is trying to do may be a small thing, but it is a very, very, very big. And I mean, one can give examples. The issue around certificates is a classic example. The solution has always been there. But what was lacking was the empathy to do whatever it takes to solve that problem. And we believe that if we can do the structural changes that we're putting in place, get the right people in leadership positions, then we'll be able to do what is right and get our satisfaction levels to higher than 70%. Thank you very much.
And cooperation by the department that you provide services to? Cooperation by the department that you provide services to?
Okay. The it's a work in progress. I think I just would like to give example. I mean, I just gave an example of procurement. But let's talk about infrastructure as well. We have a department that had their entire infrastructure run by themselves through an old outsource model that they did 10, 15 years ago. And the challenge there was to refresh that infrastructure very quickly. And the typical cycle, first of all, the first thing would have been the department was actually preparing to find ways to go and do it on their own. So documents were prepared. And the challenge to us came very, very late in the financial year, about November, December actually, with a deadline of March to essentially come up with a viable proposal to move it. And typically, we would not be able to do that on the normal basis of doing things. And then a flag would be raised, and I think the DDG Shalembe there would then get a letter to say that I cannot perform. And then the department goes on its own. But because of the changes that we've made on cloud computing, not only were we able to manage this complexity, we gave them a proposal that they could not say no to. It was a very proposal. And they signed off on us immediately. So our approach is the AG is there to deal with whether departments are complying with the CETA Act or not. Our job is to make sure that we produce the things that they want to get from us, or produce things in a way that they have no choice but to come to us because they can't get those things from anywhere else. So, it's an example. This cloud computing platform that we're talking about, we started in January. By the end of March, we had done all the contracting. But even more important for us was that by the end of March, we had consumed the entire capacity of that platform. And I must say, people who have been around CETA internally say that they've never seen such uptake of CETA services. So I think it's improving. And it will only improve and keep improving if we keep performing well. But when we don't do our work and we give options for people to not use us, people do take those options. Thanks.
Thank you for the responses. Members, can you go for follow-up questions and be considerate of time? We need to break for lunch at half past 12 and come back to continue with the remaining two entities. Can you go for follow-up, if there's any? Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Killian, Honorable Suella. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly to the CFO of SASA. Your explanation around the set-top boxes take, if I can just, again, the numbers, firstly that number, 1.5 million, is that 1.5 million or 1.5 billion? Million or billion? Million. And then the others would be, for example, 58 million, 181 million, 191 million. Perhaps in future, if you present this kind of figure, you could actually break it down into set-top boxes and into aerials and into dishes, so we can get a better idea of what we're paying and why these discrepancies exist. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you to you, Sansa. Yes, it helps to get sort of feedback from when you assumed office, what you've been hearing. Notwithstanding that, I would like to know if your contracting was wrong in the past, and you have in fact had rollout without connectivity as an integral part of the awarding of such a contract. What is USASA going to do about it now, Chairperson? I mean, how will you keep the record of whatever sites were in fact developed by government where the connectivity has lapsed? How will you get that back on track again? And have have you made provision for that in this annual performance plan and the budget provision? Or is that future music? Because that would actually be a very sad situation if we don't pick up on wherever the ball was dropped in the past. Secondly, we've had feedback from the CEO of CETA about very serious consequence management, you know, that they have taken. You know, matters were reported to the police, etc., where it's clear that things were done incorrectly. Has USASA done anything similarly? You know, the previous CEO has also left. The chairperson of the board has left, Andre Cloud. Now that is, it's just too often that happens. People get on their horses and ride off in the sunset after they have been right at the cause of the rot in organizations and agencies, and they just get away scot-free. So what have you done to follow up on those cases? Unless people see that there will be consequence management, we will not stop this in government. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. To sit, you have issues with the reliability of the network in the past. How is the situation currently? That conversation at the right time when we've been able to conclude that, we will report back to yourself. In terms of consequence management, a lot has happened. The employees who are currently under discipline, as we were implementing the Auditor General's findings, we've had to take actions against employees, and those processes are unfolding now. At the right time, we will report back to yourself. There is likely to be further consequences after we've concluded the cleanup of the process that may go back, but that will be informed by, of course, the outcome of that process. One can safely say, possibly when we come back to yourselves next time, there will be, because as we speak now, investigative reports have been concluded and disciplinaries are set, even those who, there are employees who, as we took the actions, resigned, but we followed the policy to make sure that we continue the processes, and to the extent that there will be criminal processes beyond their relationship with us, those processes are unfolding in the same manner as there are processes that the Hawks are handling in respect of some previous cases. So certainly there are consequences. People are aware of that. It's just that, of course, some of these processes are, for example, as it relates to the BDM process, there are consequences that we are dealing with now, but post the cleanup process, we will possibly get back to the board with some decisions that may relate to work that goes back that will have to be processed through other organs of state accordingly. So in the nutshell is yes, there are consequences. Honourable Mackenzie, I think CFO will answer.
Honourable Mackenzie, I confirm that it is 1.5 million items and not 1.5 billion. And then I note then the recommendation that we should split it going forward, the split of the equipment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The network is, much as it's improved a bit, it's still not operating at the level that it should be. We proposed a VSAT-based backup solution. It was tested. It was used for just had us on tested on the live capture sites, and it didn't work. But the intention was to test it, and then I asked them to test it also on non-live capture sites. And one is still waiting for reports there. But we've taken another view of doing that, because my view is that it's not really the network rather than it's more about the ability to manage that kind of operational environment. So we've taken another proposal to Home Affairs, for example, and that was dealt with at the 24th of April meeting. We're still waiting for feedback on that. And I mean, I'm certain that when this one will do this thing, we'll be able to clear these network problems once and for all. Because it's not our network, the way we've configured our network is not unique. Your typical internet service provider, for example, does not own facilities, but they're able to provide the same network services, the same at higher levels of quality to banks. And so our problem there is really a skills problem. We're addressing that. And then on the reward, there was a system that was in place that was not okay, that we stopped. And that, so we are right now in the, we are not yet completed a comprehensive a review of our reward program. I mean, even if there was going to be any reward, they say it would have to be kind of a special submission. And yeah, the history of how we're approaching this thing is, you may have mentioned it before when we're talking about the similar body that we did in our HR environment. So some of these policies that were there were informed by how people dealt with things. But I think the members of the committee should rest assured that we won't have surprises when there are things that aren't reasonable.
Thank you for the responses. I think Adan is the follow-up. We can now break for lunch. Members go first, because president.
guinea pig is that? And let's agree on time, say 45 minutes. I think it's Patricia. Then you can begin. And you have other entities here who have to attend other meetings at board meeting. But I can assure everyone that I think by 2, yeah. No, no, so for lunch for 5 minutes. The entity has a meeting after 2. But if you say for 5 minutes, I think we'll suffice. Thank you.